We made this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Red and Buried podcast. I'm Frankie.
And I'm Sarah.
And here we are. I'm going to apologise in advance if I've got a little bit of a croak, a little bit of soreness to my throat, because I tested positive for COVID, finally. Here we are.
You're like, I think, one of the very few people left that I knew that hadn't had it, and you finally succumbed.
Yep, I really did put up a good fight for at least 2 and a bit years. And there was a point last week where I was genuinely saying to my husband, I wonder if my blood's the cure for COVID. Like, I wonder if I'm the key. You know, like in Buffy, how Dawn was the key.
Yeah,
I'm the key. And then it turns out I'm not the key. And I have normal rubbish blood like everyone else. And I'm not stronger or better than anyone. I think I just forgot that I didn't do anything for 2 years.
Yeah, there is that.
That's why I didn't get it before now. So, but luckily not feeling too bad. Just a bit of a sore throat. So I apologize in advance if my vocals aren't on top notch. Performance standards, as you've all come to expect from me, of course. But how are you, Sarah?
I'm good, thank you. I am COVID free.
Oh, rubbing it in my face, why don't you?
I mean, mostly because I had it like 2 months ago. So
yeah. Okay, well, you win the race.
Yeah, so I guess so.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I am good, thank you. And I really enjoyed this month's theme.
Yes, it was an interesting one. I'm so intrigued. I'm so intrigued by what you've picked.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously we're going to reveal all shortly, so I can say a little bit more now. I actually picked a very popular one, and I did then think, should I have gone for something a bit more niche? But I chose a case that fascinated me, so there we go.
Interesting, because I've chosen a big one.
Oh, I wonder if it's the same one.
Well, I guess we'll see. Shall we get down to business and I'll reveal? So I'm going to go first.
Yes.
And I'm going to reveal the book that I read is, drum roll, Green River Running Red.
That's not the one I chose.
Ah.
So we're okay.
just to remind people that are listening, sorry, we've gone straight in with the title. So
yeah,
the theme this month was an Anne Rule book, so true crime, but not The Stranger Beside Me, which is her big book that broke her, you know, broke the world of true crime fiction, not fiction, non-fiction. True crime fiction, I just said. That's not a sentence.
Yeah.
That's oxymoron. I don't know. I'm just saying words.
You try. Well, actually, though, it's interesting you describe it like that, because one of the things I really like about Anne Rule's books are the fact that they do almost feel like fiction because she's such a good storyteller.
Yes, that is true. She is very much in the detail and the characters and the people as focus. So that is a good point. You're right, Sarah. I was right. Well done, me. I'm a genius.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Thank you. So I chose Green River Running Red, the story of America's deadliest serial killer, which, for those who won't guess from the title who this is about Gary Ridgway, who is more popularly known as the Green River Killer.
Terrible man.
Terrible man. And, you know, insane how long he got away with it for the longest time. Yeah. Shall we just get into it?
Yes, tell us about it.
Well, I'll start off with a bit of background for those that don't know much about the Green River Killer, because although he has a huge body count, I would say he's not one that's really kind of spoken about all that much, really, in the true crime world. I think it's because, one, he's a bit of a nothing human. There wasn't, like, he had no charisma or anything, you know, like arguably Ted Bundy was very charismatic.
Yeah.
And there was nothing especially kind of creepy or kind of, he didn't really, was not as gimmicky as like a John Wayne Gacy type, you know, or a Jeffrey Dahmer. So I think that's one of the reasons why he doesn't really, people aren't clamoring to talk about him so much, especially these days. But he does have one of the biggest number of victims, I think, according to, I double checked, because obviously this book was published in, I think, 2001 or 2002. And since then, obviously, you know, lots changed in the true crime world, a lot more technology, and they're uncovering new victims of loads of killers all the time. So I went onto Wikipedia to just double check. And he is the second most prolific serial killer in US history.
Wow. Who's the most prolific out of interest?
Now, I believe that that is, I've forgotten the guy's name. I think he was a, oh, I should have looked this up. I believe there was somebody who's just actually come out recently. I forget his name, but apparently he was the guy who was burying bodies in plant pots. But that might have been Canada, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, the pig farmer in Canada.
Not the pig farmer. That's Robert Pink. Oh. Pink, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, no, not him. Another one. It's quite a recent one. His crimes just came out. And he's the one that's been drawing pictures of his victims.
I've just Googled. Was it Samuel Little?
That's the one, Samuel Little.
Interesting.
I think it's him, but I think they're still processing a lot of his victims because it's still quite new that he got caught.
Jesus.
Mm. But anyway, this isn't his episode. He can piss off.
Yeah.
This is all about Gary. I mean, even giving him credit for anything is...
Yeah.
But so Gary Ridgway, he basically, his crime spanned from 1982 to 1998, but he wasn't caught until November of 2001.
Wow.
So, yeah, he had a good run of freedom before he finally got caught, convicted of 49 killings.
Wow.
But he actually confessed to 71 in total. And sadly, you know, obviously they're all victims. They were all allegedly sex workers, which is why they were obviously in a very vulnerable position that he was able to pick up sex workers and kill them the way that he did for such a long time.
Well, it's interesting and depressing that that's also probably a big reason about why he's not more widely talked about as well.
Very true. That's the thing. I think a lot of the time, particularly in that period in history, sex workers were seen as not really worth talking about or thinking yeah. about as humans, which is obviously disgusting and outrageous.
Yeah.
And luckily we're waking up to it as a society, but we still do have a long way to go on that. The reason why he got, I mean, not to jump to the end, but basically he got caught because he was still picking up sex workers, but he wasn't killing them later in life. And they ran DNA testing on him. So
that's quite unusual too, isn't it? That normally killers escalate over time. They don't de-escalate.
Well, apparently, so I also, as well as reading the book, I also listened up to one of my favorite podcasts on their episode on him, because it's been a while since I'd heard their episode.
Mm.
And they were saying that he fell in love.
Oh,
he's so in love, but still not in love enough to stop using sex workers.
Yeah,
but in love enough to not murder them. So
okay,
he's a romantic is what I'm saying.
Yeah, what a man,
what a dreamy man. Also, another thing about Gary Ridgway that he's kind of notorious for is that he had an IQ in the low 80s.
Oh.
Not the brightest spark out there necessarily. Although, you know, you'd argue that he can't be that stupid if he's gotten away with murder for as long as he did.
Yeah.
But clearly a bit of a dum-dum all round. You know, and there are plenty of people in the world that have low IQs that don't commit heinous crimes. So I'm not going to give too much to that.
Mm.
But it is, you know, from doing the reading and learning about Gary Ridgway a bit more, he had the kind of classic serial killer kind of beginning where he had a very, they say, domineering mother a lot of the time. But it's more than that. She wasn't just like quite, you know, organized and bossy, which domineering can mean. It was more things like he had a chronic bedwetting problem. And she would wash his penis every time he wet the bed quite aggressively.
Wow.
Yeah. And his father, I think, was a bit kind of downtrodden by the wife. And I think he also apparently was a bus driver, but apparently he complained a lot about sex workers around the house to Gary and things like that. So people say maybe that's where it came from, but who really knows? I think he's just a horrible piece of shit, basically.
Yeah.
But now to talk a bit more about the book specifically. So this is her 23rd book, and she described it as the most horrifying of all her books in her long career as a true crime writer. So that's a bold one.
Yeah.
And I guess considering the scale of the amount of murders committed, that kind of tracks. One thing I thought was quite interesting about this book, I you know, overall I enjoyed it, but there are a few points that I've kind of pulled out, maybe being a little bit hard on her. But she kind of starts off the book right in the beginning by saying that she implying she has a loose connection to him again. And I wonder if this came from her or if this was a pressure from her publisher to be like, look, you had that thing with Ted Bundy, obviously,
yeah.
The stranger beside me. Can we kind of shoehorn in that you had a bit of a connection? And the only kind of connection that I could really tell was that they lived in the same sort of area. And they and it's apparently he attended a book signing of hers once.
Right, okay.
And she lived quite close to some of the victims. And so, yeah, it's kind of felt a bit tenuous. It seems actually she had a closer connection to the police force that was investigating the crimes, because obviously she has a police background herself and she was very close. She used to do a lot of crime reporting for newspapers and things back in the day. So I think maybe she tried to amp that up a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
And I kind of felt like at times her focus on her relationships with the police task force was a little heavy, like to the point where like talking about some of them retiring and talking about some of the details, which I don't know if necessarily anybody really cares about when you're reading a true crime book. I kind of just want to know about what happened. But one thing that I will say about it, with all Anne Rule books that I've read, there is a heavy focus on the victims. And, you know, it's victims first and identifying them as people and very much focusing on them rather than, you know, like glorifying or giving too much to the serial killer alone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And that she was good at that. I will say that not all of the victims received the same kind of close treatment in the book. But I guess realistically, there are so many, like she couldn't do that for all of them. It would feel a little bit too heavy. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. She talked about basically she decided to write this book because she saw a clipping in a local newspaper about two young boys finding the body of who turned out to be one of his victims. Her name is Wendy Lee Caulfield, under a bridge in Kent, Washington, which is really close to where she lived. So that piqued her interest and she kept the clipping and decided to do a deeper dive into the book. I would say, obviously, Anne Rule books, as we know, are always incredibly dense and well-researched. She, you know, definitely spends a lot of time with the friends and families of these people. And she definitely focuses a heavy focus on humanizing the victims, particularly with, you know, obviously with a lot of them being sex workers.
Yeah.
I feel like it's extra important that she did that because, as I said, at the time, it's a lot where the kind of common mindset was sex workers aren't really people. We don't need to worry about them.
Yeah, they're choosing to put themselves at risk.
Exactly. And even from what I've, from listening to various things, Gary Ridgway's response when he kind of got caught was, guys, I was basically doing you a favor. Yeah. I was like,
wow.
Yeah. You know, cleaning up the streets, that kind of approach, which is, I guess, you know, considering as well that Gary Ridgway considered himself to be a Christian and very much a devout Christian. And, you know, and there's, you know, obviously, if you read the Old Testament, there's a lot of scripture that you could twist to be like, yeah, you know, it's fine to kill sex workers. Then, yeah, it's a little bit muddy. Obviously, in his mind, he thought he was doing right. But I think you can also justify anything to yourself if you really want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not a nice man.
No.
To say the least.
No. But an interesting read by the sounds of it.
It was an interesting read, absolutely. And I think, like, particularly towards like the latter part of the book, where it's more about closing in on him and how they caught him and that kind of thing, the tension kind of built up a lot. So I enjoyed that aspect. I think overall, it's not my favourite of her books that I've read. Obviously, you know, The Stranger Beside Me was, you can't really beat it, I don't think.
No.
So I enjoyed it. I did feel like the shoehorning of her connection to him felt a little bit tenuous at times. And, you know, she says things like, she was sometimes so close that I could have reached out and touched him.
It does feel like she's playing it up a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, because obviously, yeah, he attended a book signing, but she doesn't know how close realistically she got to him. You know, that's a lot of fantasizing or, you know, fantastical kind of detail to make it sound like she was a lot more involved than she was, which I understand why she did it. Like I say, you know, obviously worked very well, her connection to Ted Bundy for The Stranger Beside Me. So maybe it was her, maybe it was the publisher being like, let's see if we can work this angle a bit more and get some goods out of it. But yeah, overall, it was a solid read. I'd say it wasn't my favourite of her books. So I'm going to give it a 3 Tombstones.
Okay.
So I enjoyed it. Again, if you don't know much about Gary Ridgway, you know, read up on it, absolutely. And it's a good book to learn more about it. The thing I find mad still is that he's still alive, which you always think as well that so many of these old cases are so old that they're so beyond our history. But he only got caught in 2001.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane in itself that he managed to operate for so many years.
Yeah, completely. And you know, you often think with the big serial killers are mainly from the 70s and things, but actually this wasn't that long ago, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll still, when I say not long ago, granted it was 21 years ago he got caught, which
Oh, God.
I know this is the problem when you actually do maths around years, you realize actually
Yeah.
we are old, and I've forgotten that a 21-year-old child now exists from the time that that happened.
Oh no.
Yeah, grown adults. So that's depressing all round.
Yeah,
I'm not
thanks
saying
for
that
that.
we're, I'm not saying we're the real victims in all of this, but maybe we are.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, in conclusion, Gary Raudreau's a dick, but Anne Rule, as always, is, you know, the queen of true crime, and she still is, but it's just wasn't my favorite of her books,
No, I
personally.
think that's fair.
Thanks. Thanks very much. So now I can sit back and listen to you tell me what your book was.
Yes, you can relax.
Ugh.
So, like I said, I picked a book because the case interested me and I kind of knew about it, but obviously you get way, way more detail from reading an Anne Rule book in particular.
Sure.
So I read Small Sacrifices.
Oh, okay.
So it was written in 1987. It was actually her fifth book. It's quite an old one, obviously. And the book is about Diane Downs, who basically she shot her children.
Oh God, I remember this one. Oh God.
Yep. So yeah, basically she pulled up at hospital with her three kids in the car. All of them had been shot. She'd been shot in the arm, and she said that she'd been carjacked on a rural road by a strange man who shot them all. And she managed to drive to hospital. So one of her daughters died, and two others survived but were very, very badly injured.
Oof.
Red flags were raised immediately at the hospital about how she was acting, basically. She was very, very calm, said some odd things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, Sarah, it must be quite stressful having just shot your kids. So
Yes,
give
yeah,
her a break.
definitely. I think she immediately phoned the man that she was, I say, having an affair with. I think she was basically stalking him, a married
Oh,
co-worker.
great.
Yeah, exactly. He had the most amazing name. So actually in the book, and I don't know why this is, I assume for to be anonymous,
Perfect.
Anne Rule gave him a different name, but his name is out there. So it's, yeah, anyway, Anne called him Lou Lewiston, but his actual name was Robert Knickerbocker,
Wow.
which is like the best surname ever.
Do you think maybe she thought no one's going to believe this is a real name?
Well, yeah, that could have been it, to be fair. But Lou Lewiston is also a bit of an odd
That
name.
is an odd one, but you know what? I can kind of understand her being interested in him because who wouldn't want the surname Knickerbocker if you could marry that?
Exactly. So yeah, the book was around this, and obviously around the police investigation. It took a while for them to arrest her because they were obviously investigating. And actually, most of the trial hung off the testimony of her surviving daughter.
Oh God, how old is she?
No, I can't actually remember.
Young, presumably.
Young, yes, young. So she was convicted. She was diagnosed as a sociopath. They believe that she is fully sane but has a multitude of personality disorders. She's never actually admitted what she did, and she's gone for parole three times now and thankfully been turned down every time.
Yeah,
And
good.
actually, I think last time they said that she couldn't apply again as quickly. So I'd say
Calm
that says
down.
quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. She also escaped from prison for 10 days at one
What?
point. Yeah. Massive manhunt, and she was eventually caught.
Well, I wonder why they wouldn't give her parole.
Yeah, weird that. She got an extra 5 years, I think, on her sentence, which
Jesus.
doesn't seem much for a
No.
prison escape. But what do I know?
Well, back in the day, sorry to pause for a second, but I believe back in the day, the really olden days, way before this, it was kind of if you escaped from prison, they were kind of like, yeah, fair enough. And
Good work.
I don't think it was like illegal. I don't think you could get penalized for it. I think they kind of just assumed you would try and escape. So they were like, yeah, fair enough. I
Yeah.
may have totally got that wrong, but I seem to recall listening to a podcast and they talked about that. If I'm wrong, please don't correct me. I don't want to know. I want to just know I'm right. Thank you.
Interesting. Must have been pre-80s, clearly, or 90s,
Yes,
I'm
yes.
guessing. Yeah, so the book, like most of Anne Rule's books, it sort of documented all these accounts. She spoke to friends, acquaintances, neighbours, and also her surviving daughter, Christy, as well,
Oh,
contributed
wow.
towards the book. She did try to get Diane Downs to input into the book as well, and she exchanged several letters with her, but ultimately she wasn't interested, I'm assuming because she never admitted what she'd done and didn't really want to get into all of that.
Yeah, it would be hard, because how do you comment without being like, if, do like, what's his face, OJ Simpson, if I did it,
yes,
here's what I would have done.
That book is amazing.
Insane.
And
absolutely
depressing.
Batshit crazy.
Yeah. Never seen anything like it.
No, seriously. We should do an episode about that at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Plenty to say on that one. So yeah, I mean, the book was really good in that obviously Anne Rule's books are always quite dense because there's so much research and background, all that that goes into it. She's very good, I think, at making you understand why the killer, in inverted commas, got to the point they did without kind of being sympathetic to the crimes they did.
Yes.
They did. That's terrible English. Yeah, she does. Absolutely. Kind of builds up this whole picture. So, you know, she sort of showed that Diane had an awful childhood, sexually abused. She didn't have any friends. She's very lonely. What was interesting is when I was doing research around the book, I read someone's review and thought, actually, yeah, that's a really good point. Of all of this, though, hangs on what Diane has said herself. And she's a sociopath.
Yeah.
Can you really trust her? And her dad, actually, who has been accused of the sexual assault, and I'm not saying don't believe people when they, you know, but he is vocally one of Diane's biggest supporters and is still campaigning to try and get her released from prison.
Wow.
Yeah. She's one of these ones where there's actually a kind of quite a big group, I think, of people that don't believe she's guilty and support her, and very odd because it seems absolutely bizarre. Yeah. I mean, reading the book and reading other information, it seems bizarre to think that anyone could go, oh, yeah, no, she probably didn't do it.
Yeah, just give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
So did, forgive my ignorance, did she say that her dad was the one that abused her?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And he's still backing her up?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a bold thing. And that's really interesting because that's what Casey Anthony did, didn't she?
Yes.
She said her dad abused her for years.
Yeah.
Wow. What an interesting... what a very understanding parent if he didn't do it.
Yeah, all very odd, and obviously we'll never know what the actual story is. But yeah, so what was interesting is Anne includes bits of the letters that Diane Downs sent her from prison.
Right.
And she kind of, she takes a lot of the background stuff and the childhood information as fact.
Okay.
Whereas other parts of the letter about the crime or you know, current... the current situation is very easily disproven, which she acknowledges in the books. So it does kind of make you go, why do you believe her?
Yeah.
So yes, just interesting. I really enjoyed the book. Like I said, the case is fascinating. I did think it was maybe a little bit long.
I feel that with a lot of her books, to be honest.
Yeah, it was like you saying, all the kind of information about people who are massively peripheral to the case.
Yes, yes.
And you're like, I get that you're trying to draw us in and, you know, include everything and anything, but actually I don't care about some of it.
Yeah.
And it makes it a bit of a slog sometimes.
Absolutely. I feel like editing would be her friend, you know? Someone
would
go in there and be like, I love that you want to include every person in this. But I don't know if you need to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long your book was.
Pages. It's she always uses a very small font.
Yes.
As well. I'll say that about Anne Rule books because they're old.
Yeah.
Oh my God, do we not even number pages? Okay, here we go. Mine is, this is fun, isn't it, for everyone? This is pages. 661 pages.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Mine was 528. Apparently, yep. I read it on Kindle. And it did not need to be that many pages.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Anne. I mean, Anne's dead. She doesn't care.
Well, R.I.P. Anne, wherever you are.
Yes. An amazing woman.
And this, there's no excuse for not editing better.
No. But I suppose we can't blame her for that. We can blame the editors, the publishing company.
I kind of see it as well, with particularly with, you know, she is such a huge name in true crime. And I kind of feel like when you reach a certain point, you don't really get edited. Like, I always think that about Quentin Tarantino. Like, his films get longer and longer. No one edits him because they're like, it's Quentin Tarantino. We can't edit him.
Yeah.
Because he's a genius or whatever. So I think after a while, you're a victim of your own success. And people are like, yeah, whatever you think, Anne, is fine. But actually, it wouldn't have lost anything by cutting certain details out, perhaps.
No, I would agree. Interestingly, there is a TV movie that was made of this book starring Farrah Fawcett.
No way.
Yeah, so I am going to watch that. I think maybe this weekend. I'm going to get on that because I can only imagine. I love those like Hallmark movie in the UK, Channel 5 daytime trashy films. So I think this will be amazing. So I will definitely watch that.
I'm so gutted I've got COVID because I would definitely invite myself around to watch that with you.
Oh, you can watch it virtually with me. I'll track it down.
Yes, please. Oh, and yours, do you know what? I remember this case from, have you ever seen that documentary series, Evil Women?
Yes,
yeah. I remember her episode from that, and that is the same kind of daytime trashy, randomly on Channel 5. Like, I love those things. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm excited. Hopefully we can find it then to watch.
Yes,
this.
I will get on that. I'm sure it'll be online somewhere.
Got to be.
Yeah. So I will probably go with the same rating as you, I think. 3 out of 5. Really good book, really fascinating case, just too long.
Yep. I agree that she is, I don't know if she gets paid by the word or the page, but you know, it's in her mind, it obviously felt important to include all of these details. So I get
Yeah. It's interesting because I read another one of her books a while ago. I read Everything She Ever Wanted.
Oh yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah. The one about Tom Allinson. Anyway, yes, yeah. I read that one. And I remember thinking the same thing at the time. I was almost like, this sounds awful to say, it's a bit like, will you hurry up and get to the crime?
Yeah.
Because no, it was I remember it a couple of hundreds of pages of background before it kind of got into what the book was about. And it was like, I don't care.
No, this is the thing. And I don't think it is like crass or anything to be that way, because at the end of the day, that's the whole reason you're reading true crime books, is for the crime. To find out what happened.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
So I don't think it's not that you're like bloodthirsty. I would say you just want to get to the point of the whole book.
Yeah.
The whole reason that she did it in the first place was because of the crime. So.
Yeah. And also I think when you're going in with the background before you get to the crime as well, it makes it hard to tie in what she did and or what the person did and why. Mm. You almost need to know the details of what happened and then bring in the background information and
yeah,
it makes it easier to read it and be like, okay, yeah, that kind of feeds into that. And anyway, I couldn't do better, so I will shut up.
But this is the thing, isn't it? Like, there's a reason why she is the OG queen of true crime. So
absolutely.
And one thing you can guarantee, even if like it's not going to be, you know, a short, snappy read by any stretch, you always know you're going to learn something interesting from an Anne Rule book, whether it's a case you didn't know or some details you didn't know. She's always good.
Absolutely. And also, you will never get a more comprehensive version of what happened than by reading an Anne Rule book on the topic.
Very true. She always does her due diligence and literally speaks to every single person involved in everything, every aspect of the case.
Yeah.
Even people that, you know, like neighbours of neighbours or cousins of long distant people that maybe she doesn't need to, but it's fine. It's good for background.
Yeah, exactly. So I would recommend reading Small Sacrifices.
Just, interesting
you
title.
Know, feel free. Yeah, actually, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. It is a weird title, isn't it?
It's like, well, these kids, it's just a small sacrifice. Is that the implication?
I think it's because basically she clearly viewed her kids as sort of they just got in the way of what she wanted. She had a lot of affairs at work. Yeah. And she was after this man and she knew he didn't want kids. And yeah, I'm guessing it's the kids are a small sacrifice for her to pay to get the man she wants.
The thing that probably is the most upsetting about what you just said is that Knickerbocker doesn't want his name to live on in children.
I know, that is devastating. I might legally change mine.
I would say, or you could find him, but he might be a bit old by now. But yeah, no, fair enough. Go with Knickerbocker. I think that would suit you, actually.
Yeah, I could carry it off.
Could you hyphenate it as Knickerbocker Glory?
Or I'll change my first name to Glory and be Glory Knickerbocker.
Oh my God, that's the best name I've ever heard in my life. You could just become Prime Minister with that name, just on that platform alone.
Yeah, well, leave it with me. I'm on it.
Fantastic. Okay, it's exciting, everyone. Let's watch Sarah's evolution into Knickerbocker before. So, Sarah, some exciting, interesting surprising news to share with you. We had our first listener email with a suggestion.
Yay!
I want to give a shout out to Joanne for sending in her suggestion, because not only was it lovely that she took the time to reach out to us, but it's also a really good suggestion.
Thank you, Joanne.
Seriously, really, really chuffed. And also, the thing that always staggers me and Sarah is when someone we don't know listens.
Yeah, because we've had a couple of topic suggestions from people previously, but they've been people that we know.
Yeah.
Which also is lovely, don't get me wrong, but I'm aware that my friends probably feel obliged to listen.
Yeah, and you'd think the people that know us would have had enough of us. So it is extra impressive when they want to hear more.
Yeah.
But even more impressive is that people who we do not know listen and are nice and then also give us really good advice on topics to try. So Joanne, you are the listener of the month. We could do that as a thing.
Yeah, gold star.
Well done, Joanne. So just reading Joanne's email, she said, I enjoy your podcast. Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you.
A theme I would like to hear you discuss is friendship in crime fiction, which is a really interesting one. Some books that I've read that I think are covered by this, so we can't do these now once I read them out.
Yeah.
Maybe we can. The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley, which I have read.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yep. The Festival by Sarah Norton.
I haven't read that.
Me neither. And We Are All Liars by Karis Jones.
I have read that.
I haven't read that.
Very good.
Okay, well, these are great suggestions, Joanne. So clearly there's some that I need to catch up on. And I think that theme, friendship in crime fiction, is always a really interesting one, because it could be, you know, it could be a red herring sometimes, or it could be the whole reason for the crime. Like, it's always a complex, friendship in crime is always complex, isn't it?
Mm.
Thanks for your input, Sarah. That's great.
No, do you know what? I was just thinking, I was mulling this over in my head, and I was thinking a really good book would be...
Don't tell me.
Well, no, because it kind of crosses over with a future theme I want to do, so I won't use it for either. But I was thinking a really good one would be, what's it called? The one that they did the Netflix series on recently. You made me watch it. I enjoyed it.
Oh, the One of Us is Lying.
Yes, that was it. That would have been quite a good one, because obviously that's very friendship based.
I really enjoyed that series, actually. For anyone looking for a TV recommendation, if you want to just binge some teen crimey trash murder mystery in a weekend, go for One of Us is Lying, because Sarah and I both did it, I think, in like 2 days.
It was fantastic. My only niggle, and I don't think this is a spoiler, but cut it out if you think it is, my only niggle was that it didn't all wrap up in a neat bow at the end. I really hate when they leave things open for another season.
Oh, I want another season, so I'm happy.
I want another season, but I wanted resolution as well. I mean, there was resolution. Yes. Obviously they solved it and everything, but I like things wrapped up in a neat bow.
Yeah, that's the thing, you're a completist.
Yeah, clearly.
Well, it's still worth a watch. If anyone's looking for something to watch, we do recommend that one. So
absolutely. And yeah, great topic. I am going to have a think about what book to read.
Yes,
now.
This is exciting. Because that's the thing, there are so many good ones out there about friendships and based in friendships. So yeah, I'd be shocked if we picked the same one for this category.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that we avoided it, both with Anne Rule, because obviously it's quite a limited pool of options. Yes. And also, obviously, the Agatha Christie one. There was only, I think, 10 or so options for that one.
Yeah, no, we're doing well so far. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, because we don't have anyone to check for us. We're literally just going to turn up on the day and see what happens. So,
yeah,
interesting. Wow.
Adds a bit of suspense.
Oh, there you go. It all fits with the theme. But yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. If you have a suggestion for a crime book or a theme that you'd like us to cover, please email us at redandberrypodcast@gmail.com, or send us a message on any of the social channels or anything like that. We're everywhere within reason.
Love your suggestions, comments.
Please, we love them a lot. Yeah, you can follow us on all the social channels. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Elsewhere on We Made This. We dig music.
I got given a set of mindfulness cards as a Christmas present.
Okay.
And it's a load of fucking bollocks, it really is.
Is it like, with them being cards, I've got them, like, this image of them being like Brian Eno's Oblique Strategies, but with, like, go and read a book or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much. these cards, you read them one a day and you're meant to do the tasks. And the task on one day was...
Listen to Bruce Springsteen.
Go and listen to a piece of music that you haven't heard before and listen to it without any prejudice, regardless of genre. And I'm like, Have you met me? That isn't possible.
I do that every day anyway.
So I went and listened to something I hadn't heard before and didn't know what genre it was going to be because it was from a set of polls on Twitter. And I listened to this song. It was about someone and obsessive thoughts and worrying they were going to start cutting themselves. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't very mindful.
Chucky Vision. A Chucky podcast.
I'm vaguely familiar with point horror.
Did you ever read any?
Maybe as a kid, but I don't know them as well as I do Goosebumps.
Right, okay. But how do you feel the kind of adaptation from the books to the series worked? Were they direct adaptations of the books, or were they more inspired by continuation of?
They were pretty direct, actually. There's like 60 books or so, or at least in the original run. He always did those like Goosebumps 2000 and stuff. Like, he was always updating the titles, which, I mean, God knows what kids are reading these days. I don't know if they're reading the original books.
Gotham U, a Batman podcast.
Hear what you're saying, and I can't help but think, like, is it just nostalgia that's giving Michael Keaton the pass on this? But also, it's not his fault. Warner Brothers came and gave him a check and was like, hey, be Batman. What's he gonna do, say no?
No, not at all. And Michael Keaton himself even loved being Batman. He did an interview not too long ago. I don't remember what the interview was, but he was talking about coming back. And he described why he didn't do Batman forever. And, you know, for years there have been speculations, there have been rumors, and he put it to rest. And what everyone said was true. He just didn't like the direction that Warner Brothers was going with the Bat franchise.
There you go.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.